Welcome back to Mormon Expression Voices. My name is Katrine, and today I have someone new for us to listen to. Her name is Cheyenne. Hi, Cheyenne.
Hi.
Thank you for taking time to spend with us today.
Oh, it's no problem.
So let's just begin where all good Mormon stories start, at the beginning with goodly parents, I hope.
yeah, so I guess my family's a little atypical. It's kind of difficult to explain my family's background with Mormonism. So my dad was born and raised Mormon, but here's the catch. He was only raised Mormon out of spite, because he and his parents had a nasty divorce, and his father's Lutheran, his mother was Mormon. So it was just kind of this way to get back at his father. And then my mom converted for my dad, but my dad was inactive for most of my early childhood. So my mom kind of doubled down where my dad didn't.
Oh, that's interesting. So even though she didn't come into the marriage with Mormonism, she's the one that held on to it.
Right, yeah. She always told me, like, when I was little, she said that she even, that her entire life, she knew that she was going to marry a good Mormon boy. I don't know, that seems weird to me now, but I've never asked her about it.
So what was it like for you growing up Mormon? Where did you grow up at?
I grew up in Southern California, in a little agricultural community. And as far as growing up goes, it was pretty interesting. My mom would take my sisters and I to church. My dad usually worked Sundays, but on the Sundays that he didn't, he tended to stay home and watch TV and sleep and that kind of thing.
Did you ever question why he was doing that?
Yes. I guess when I was probably three or four, I actually went up to him and asked him why he wasn't going to church with us. To this day, he actually cites that as a reason why or how he was reactivated. But I don't actually remember what his answer was to that when I asked him. So to me, it was just always was the way things were. Dad would watch TV while we went to church, and then we'd get home and have an early dinner and then play, you know, board games or watch TV or something.
What you asked him made a big enough impression that he began to go to church again?
Not immediately. He didn't actually start going back to church until I was, 14, 15. But I guess that was the moment when he started to take the teachings seriously, you know, when he started to realize that he identified as Mormon still, despite not going. And he actually, the catalyst was he had a pretty scary medical issue where he was rushed to the ER from work and was diagnosed with several heart problems that kind of, I guess, shook him pretty hard. And he started going to church again shortly after that.
He was scared righteous.
Yeah, I think that's a good way of putting it.
And you were probably junior high at that point. Going into high school, did you start to question your Mormon upbringing?
I kind of doubled down on it, to be honest. I was really, really concerned with salvation and with the doctrine of the church, you know, and I spent a lot of time thinking about it and reading about it. It never crossed my mind that it was anything but true.
Did you take early morning seminary since you weren't in Utah? Did they offer that?
Yes. Yeah. And I was lucky enough to have several neighborhood kids who were also Mormon. So we carpooled a lot. And I don't think I missed a day. I think the only days I missed were like 1 week where I was, you know, deathly ill and couldn't get out of bed because I had the flu or something.
So you were a good Mormon girl.
I like to think so. My older sister told me once that I was really rebellious, but I think that was more because I questioned everything, you know, so somebody told me to do something and it didn't matter that they were my leader. I'd be like, well, why do I have to do that? But, you know, I took the actual religion seriously.
Yeah, that's funny that to be rebellious is because you were asking a question.
Right, yeah.
It's funny how asking questions is considered rebellious in Mormon land.
Yeah, I always thought that was, it struck me as odd at the time, and now it's even more odd.
So high school goes, you go through high school. Did you ever think of going on a mission?
Yeah, I actually really wanted to be the first in my family to go on a mission because my dad didn't go. And then we didn't have any, I never had any brothers. It was just me and my two sisters. So I, like, from a very early age, I wanted to go on a mission and I wanted to, be the first in my family to do it. I just had this really intense drive for that. But my older sister beat me to the punch. She went on her mission, when she turned 21 and hadn't gotten married yet.
Okay. Did you follow her example and go on a mission yourself?
No, by the time I was mission age, I was well out of the church.
Oh, so something happened between that time period. What is the first something?
It kind of started probably when I was 17 or so. I remember starting to be unsure with some of the Mormon doctrine, but I was still very like firm in other areas. But the big thing is, I started to realize that I was gay, and that put like this whole, full on crisis mode into, I guess, my life.
And up until that point, you didn't know that you were gay?
I mean, looking back, I see all of the signs, but when you're that young and, things are going crazy in your life in general, you don't really understand what's going on, So I always knew that there were like these odd things ha like happening inside of me, but I never for a second entertained the idea that I might be gay.
So it must have been shocking when you put two and two together for yourself.
It was kind of a long process. Like I had the very first inkling when I was about 17. My entire senior year of high school was pretty much this huge paradigm shift for me in that sense. But I was still very, very resolute. Like, I am not gay. I cannot be gay. And that lasted until the end of my first year of college, probably.
So several years of struggle, it sounds like. Okay. And what made you finally admit that you were gay?
It was kind of a combination of things. It was this, there was a crystallizing moment for me where my, best friend in college and I were very, very close, and then we started to drift apart. And, there was this moment where she told me that she started dating this guy who I thought was a complete scumbag. And when she told me that, I just had this like moment of clarity where I was like, oh my God, I don't, I'm not just friends with her. I really, really care about her, and I'm never going to have her. And then like all of the dominoes came tumbling down all at once.
Okay. That must have been very overwhelming and scary.
It was one of the most terrifying experiences of my life.
So, did you talk to anybody about this, or you just kept silent?
No, I didn't think I could talk to anybody. It was one of those things where once I connected the dots, I thought to myself, this can never get out. Like, no one can know about this.
Right, explain to me how that was living. I don't want to say lie because you weren't lying, but there's something that you is such a primary center of who you are, and yet nobody knows about it. How is it to live with, what's the correct word? To live with the two separate lives, I suppose.
It was very, very difficult to navigate. And I mean, I guess everybody else around me kind of knew, I was kind of the last person to know, that kind of situation. So I went into this horrible, horrible depression. And people around me, some people noticed and, cared a lot and tried to, get me to open up. And a lot of people kind of figured that I was going through this sexuality crisis. I don't know what, clued them in, but for whatever reason, they figured it out. And some other people actually gave me a really hard time about it. There was one point in time where every time I would walk into the dorm common room, if anybody I knew was in there, they'd look up and like call me a dyke and then go on with whatever else they were doing. And this was before I had even like talked to anyone about it. So that kind of pushed me even further into this no one can know mentality.
Wow. What school were you going to?
At the time, I was going to this little tiny community college in Wyoming, which I guess might have been a bad choice in hindsight.
How did you end up at that school?
I actually kind of dropped out of high school, and my mom started homeschooling me my last couple of years, except for drama. I would go into the local high school for like drama classes and that kind of thing. And so I had no plans to do college at all, but my drama teacher, took me along to this, you know, high school theater conference. And Casper College was recruiting, at the conference, and they offered me a scholarship. And it was kind of a good out for me because I wasn't really enthusiastic about my home life at the time. So Casper was 10 hours away, and it was a full scholarship, and they had a pretty good theater program for being a community college in the middle of nowhere. So, that's how I wound up there.
Okay. That's pretty cool that you were a theater major.
Yeah.
But then it sounds like you had some bad experiences.
Yeah. Yeah. The theater department there was very polarized, just in a general sense. So in and around, my entire like sexuality and religion crisis, there were also a lot of other politics happening at the same time that I think contributed to, you know, this feeling of isolation.
Did you complete college there then?
I did not graduate with an associate's, but I finished my 2 years there, and then I immediately transferred into a 4-year school in North Dakota. I really know how to pick them. So, and then I finished. I graduated. It took me 4 years at University of North Dakota. So, I just graduated about a year and a half ago.
Not too long ago. Which school were you at when you finally came clean?
Yeah, it was the end of my first year, so I was at Casper College when I had that, you know, crystallizing moment, and then I spent all of sophomore year trying to talk it out with myself, you know, trying to make sense of it, and I didn't tell anybody there. And then that summer, the summer after sophomore year, when I moved up to North Dakota, on the car trip there, I was driving, and it was like a 12-hour trip. I had this like long talk with myself, and I decided I had this just moment where I said, you know what? This isn't working. I've done everything that the church has asked of me. I've tried so hard to make a place for myself in the church and follow the church's teachings, and it hasn't made me happy. So since this isn't working, I'm going to try something else. So that was kind of a clean slate for me moving to North Dakota. And I decided to give it a try to, you know, just live authentically and not lie to myself and not lie to anybody else and not be afraid to pursue relationships. And if it worked out, then I would know because I would be happy. And if it didn't work out, then maybe I could go back and give church another try. So it was just, like I said, a clean slate.
Okay, but I know that decision must have been hard because growing up in the church, I'm sure you heard many times such rhetoric such as homosexuality is a sin next to murder, you'll be in outer darkness, mm-hmm. all those kinds of statements. So to make that kind of decision must not have come easily.
Yeah, it was really tough, and it just... it was the result of spending the last half of my freshman year and all of my sophomore year thinking about it pretty much every waking hour. You know, I was praying multiple times a day. I was fasting. I was reading my scriptures. I was journaling. I was thinking about it. I was just, you know, doing everything that you're told to do, you know, to get to that point, and nothing was working. So I just had a moment where I snapped emotionally. Like I just couldn't do it anymore. And that was the moment where I said to myself, like, this isn't working. You know, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again. And I'm tired of doing the same thing over and over again.
So when you go to this new college, do you start out right away as introducing yourself? It's not like you're saying, hi, I'm Cheyenne, I'm gay. But did you let it be known that that was part of who you were?
Yeah, I didn't like immediately come out to like my roommates or anything. But I also didn't go out of my way to hide it. And I started going to the local or the university Gay Straight Alliance, you know, and making friends. And pretty much by October, I had met a girl and we'd started dating. And probably by November, all of my roommates knew and, you know, my coworkers knew. And that was just the end of it.
And how did they respond, your roommates and coworkers?
Oh, they were super great. North Dakota, for all that it's a very, very conservative state, most people there are kind of, they don't really care what you do with your personal life as long as you have a good work ethic and you, you know how to push through the hard stuff.
So what happens when it's time to call mama and let her in on your life?
Yeah, funny you should ask. My parents, we've never had that talk.
Oh, really? Oh, so if they hear this, this is all new to them?
Well, we're at a point where I'm pretty sure that they know and they're not like, I don't know. I think I'm not worried about them hearing this because if they're hearing it, it means that they have a lot of explaining to do about why they're listening to Mormon Expression.
That's true.
And here's the thing, like just for reference, it's a talk I'm planning on having with them and it's a talk that I was going to have with them about 4 years ago, I think. But here's like, I went home for Thanksgiving and my plan, like I walked onto that airplane knowing that I was going to come out to them during that. Cause I've always felt like it's something that I owe them in person, you know, not a phone call, not a letter, in person. So that week, my mother was diagnosed with stage 3 breast cancer. So I decided to hold off. And there hasn't been time since then. You know, it's been a family effort getting my mom through like chemo and radiation and surgery and all of that. So now it's just a matter of finding the right time.
Yeah, I can understand that. When my brother came out to us, it was when my mom was going through her cancer. And it was hard. I know it was hard on him because he felt kind of ignored. But at the same time, we were like, we have one crisis right now. We can't focus on, you know, it just seemed like it was too overwhelming for us to have so many fires going at the same time.
Yeah.
So I can understand why you held off. How is your mom doing? Is she doing better?
Yeah, she is in remission.
Okay.
Yeah, and I think she just finished with like reconstruction surgery and all that. So she seems to be doing well. I guess chemo leaves you, you know, exhausted for years afterward, but she's, you know, got a career and she's keeping busy. So in that sense, she's definitely healed.
Oh, good. I'm glad to hear it. Right, but you said you have a feeling that they already know.
Yeah, it's kind of funny because most of my family knows. Like my sisters know. Most of my extended family, the ones you know, the people I'm close with, they all know. So it's really only my parents that are in the dark. But I think the last time I visited them, which was for Thanksgiving of just you know this last year. They just kept making all these comments, you know, like I was complaining that I needed coffee because, you know, you turn into a coffee addict as soon as you start to sin. But, and they just rolled with it. You know, my dad was like, you know, you'll find that we're a lot more, more liberal on obedience to the word of wisdom than you might think. There's a lot of things like that, you know, just making comments like that. That make me think that they're trying to tell me that they know. So.
Okay. Well, good. Do they know you've left the ch well, they know you're drinking coffee, so they know you've left the church.
Yeah, I mean that's another thing. I've never sat down and clarified with them my exact stance on the church, but they do know that I don't go. Every time I move, they send my records. They take the liberty of sending my records to my new ward, so I still get phone calls and that kind of thing.
Oh.
But they know that I'm not like going, and they know that I drink coffee, and you know I'm pretty sure they've put the dots together that I have alcohol in my apartment and that kind of thing. So.
Sounds like they are open to your changes.
To a point, yeah. I mean, I think they're at a place where they recognize that there's not much they can do. You know, like their children are grown and we're all making autonomous decisions, so their job is to love us regardless.
And what do your sisters think? You told them that you were gay.
Yeah, my younger sister is incredibly supportive. You know, she's never said a word against it. Ever. She met a girlfriend of mine once, and she seemed to really enjoy the experience, you know, so everything's good on that front. My older sister, on the other hand, is a different story. We haven't spoken about it since I told her, and that was, I think 4 years ago. And she just kind of pretends, oh, sorry.
Oh, I was going to say, you haven't spoken at all, or just about.
No. We haven't spoken about me being gay,
Okay.
but there was a period of almost a year, I think. I don't know, my timelines are running together now, but there was a period of at least 6 months, possibly a full year, where we didn't talk at all after I came out to her. The only reason we started talking again, in fact, was because we were both at Thanksgiving the year that my mom was diagnosed with cancer.
Okay.
So that's why we started talking again. But she doesn't acknowledge that I came out to her. She doesn't talk about it. I think she just does her best to pretend it never happened.
Do you think she sees your homosexuality as a choice?
Oh, I know most definitely she does.
And so she probably thinks it's a sin.
Correct. Yeah.
Is she active in the church?
Very much so.
All right. What about your other sister? Is she active in the church?
To my knowledge, yeah. I think that there's a lot that she struggles with, but she kind of is of the, hold to the rat approach type thing.
Sounds like you're kind of lonely in your family.
Yeah, I'm kind of a black sheep, I suppose.
Back to asking questions, I guess. That's rebellious, right?
Yeah, I've always kind of been the odd one out, so it's a feeling I'm used to.
Did you stop going to church immediately? Was it a quick reaction, or did you try to make it work?
At the end of my freshman year of college, when I first had that realization, oh my God, I'm gay, I stopped going to church later that summer. Like I went to church through the end of the school year and then stopped going over the summer. But I didn't stop going because I had started to not believe. I stopped going because I was so very depressed that I like couldn't even get out of bed.
Did you seek any counseling or anything?
No, not specifically related to being gay. I did eventually go into counseling for other issues that were going on at the time and academic issues, but that wasn't, we never touched on any sexuality concerns.
Okay. So you graduate from college, and where does that take you?
I graduated college and almost immediately moved to Chicago, where I am now.
And why did you go there?
My best friend, actually, the same one from my freshman year of college, she wound up transferring to a school in Wisconsin and graduated this as well. And so we had been talking for about a year about getting a fresh start. Both of us were tired with where we were at and, you know, ready to move on into like a, you know, move to a city and get going. And it was either Chicago or Minneapolis for me. And Chicago worked out and I moved in with my best friend. Or I don't think we don't talk much anymore now that, you know, time has moved on, but I still consider her a friend of mine. So
But you're living with her?
I was, sorry. Yeah, no, we lived together our first year here in Chicago, and then just this last summer I moved out. So I'm not living with her anymore. She got married,
Oh,
so
okay. Okay.
yeah.
So just the natural progression of life and circumstances.
Right, yeah, there wasn't anything, there wasn't a huge like blow up between us or anything. She just we knew when we knew when we both moved to Chicago that she was going to be getting married after the first year that we were living together. So that was always set in stone.
And how do you like Chicago?
Oh, I love it. It's been nothing but welcoming to me.
Good. And how's your ward? Do you have a calling? Just kidding. My
yeah, no,
dad always
I've
asks
never.
me that. That's why I asked.
Oh yeah, no, I get it when I get home, when I go home too. But no, apparently the ward here is great. I've never been, but they seem like nice people every time they call me.
Because your parents transferred your records.
Right. Yeah. So I'm officially part of the YSA Lakeshore ward. So.
Okay. Are you working in theater?
I was until very recently. I had a theater job and then a day job to pay my bills. And I recently quit the job I was working in theater to give myself a little more time to breathe and kind of get my ducks in a row, figure out what I want to do, that kind of thing. So,
Ah, darn, you wish you could just do theater.
yeah, life would be a lot simpler if I could just focus on my passions all the time instead of having to pay bills and stuff.
All right. And are you still dating? You mentioned a girlfriend. Are you still dating her?
No, we had a major blowout kind of breakup my senior year of college. So we made it 3 years, almost exactly 3 years, by the way. Like right down, we broke up a month before our three-year anniversary, and that took a huge toll on me. I had never ever ever been in a serious relationship before, because I dated boys a lot, and they never obviously it never worked out. Never felt comfortable being in a relationship with them. And then this girl was my first girlfriend, and we just fell. And this is apparently a very common thing amongst lesbians. There's jokes about it, but yeah, we just fell head over heels for each other and immediately moved into this serious relationship status. And so I was a bit unprepared for dealing with a breakup like that.
Yeah, well, 3 years is a very long time, too. It would be with somebody.
It is. And I was under the impression that everything was going well. I was completely blindsided by the whole thing. So, it was part of my identity. It was, I was ready to move on and like marry her, and then she broke up with me. So, it's a learning curve, I think, that a lot of people learn younger than I had to learn, because I didn't experience heartbreak as a teenager.
And are you dating again?
Yeah, after moving to Chicago, I met someone, and so it's been just over a year now.
And does she know of anything of Mormons?
She's not super well versed in Mormonism, but she listens to me talk about it sometimes, and she asks me questions. And some of her family actually are Moonies, so she understands the restrictiveness that it can have.
Oh wow. Two worlds colliding.
Right. Yeah. No, it's always interesting to hear stories like whenever she starts talking about the part of her family that's still involved, and the whole arranged marriages thing and just the whole nine yards.
I imagine the Moonies are not very liberal. Do they believe in homosexuality? That sounds like I phrased that question so weird. Do they believe in gay rights?
You're right. Yeah, no, I understand. And honestly, I don't know. My girlfriend's immediate family do not practice anymore. Like they are not part of it.
Okay.
So it's mostly her extended family, I think cousins, grandmother, that kind of thing. So she's a little removed from any politics that might be accompanied by it.
In Utah, they now recognize gay marriage. How is it in Chicago? Do they recognize gay marriage in Chicago?
I think, yeah, actually, like that's a relatively recent thing, but yeah, like gay rights are, I guess, alive and well here. It's Marriage is a thing, and I don't know, just it's a good climate.
Do you ever have kind of flashbacks of what is appropriate and what is not appropriate, and how do you reconcile that with your lifestyle now?
Very occasionally. I know a lot of people when they stop going to church, still have a lot of issues with like guilt and sin and that kind of thing. I don't, for the most part. Just once in a very great while, I'll have a moment where I think about whether I made the right choice, whether what I'm doing is actually very, very wrong. But it doesn't like keep me up at night or anything, and I usually like have a moment of self-check, where I go through all of the reasons why I made this choice and how, I am actually very much happier, and it's just not a big deal.
Okay, sounds like you have no regrets.
No, I can't say that I do.
Good. I think you're one of the few people I've talked to that can answer it like that. That's good. How did you come stumble across Mormon Expression? I imagine other podcasts as well.
I guess I don't know. I lurk a lot on the ex-Mormon subreddit. Well, the entire Mormon subreddit complex. I spend a lot of time there, but I don't post a lot. I mostly just read. So, people recommend podcasts like every probably 3 or 4 months, a thread pops up with somebody asking for good podcast recommendations. So, I just kind of organically fell into, Mormon Expression, Voices, Infants on Thrones, the whole nine yards.
So even though you don't have any regrets, it sounds like you still spend time thinking about Mormonism and what it means and how it affects your life or other people's lives.
Yeah, I do. Mormonism is still very much an academic interest of mine. Like I enjoy the history. I enjoy the thought experiments of dealing with Mormon theology. Just I really enjoy it. And also it's, I mean, it, for better or for worse, I grew up Mormon. It affects who I am. It doesn't matter whether I go to church. It's still very much a part of me and a part of my life experience.
I feel the same way. And it's funny how fascinating Mormon history becomes when you stop learning the whitewash version. You learn the real meat of it all.
Yeah, that was a huge, huge thing for me. I don't remember really when I started getting into it, but it just seemed such an interesting thing to really read about and really study about. And I was always bored to tears by Mormon history, like in Sunday school. It never resonated with me. I was always like, who cares about the pioneers? I want to talk more about, celestial glory. But on the outside now, it's much more fascinating.
There was a point when I was just reading, harmlessly reading, and a fact that I'd never known before, I found out it was actually about polyandry. And I was just remember going, what's happening? Do you remember any of those moments for you where you were just shocked or surprised?
I wish I could say that I remembered more, but because it was never something that I left the church over, like all of it came after I had already decided to stop going. So I really don't remember like being super shocked, but I guess you also should know I'm a pretty cynical person by nature. So like there I reached a point of almost equilibrium, I guess, where I had like consumed so much information that like I would read something that I didn't previously know about Mormon history or, just some scandalous fact or something. And I would just like shrug and be like, oh yeah, well, even though I didn't know that, I kind of expected it, and then I'd move on. So.
Sounds healthier than the way I experience things.
I wouldn't say healthier. I like probably just very different. Not much shocks me, whether it's Mormon related or other life related.
Well, good. You must be cool, calm, and collected.
I like to think so.
What's next for you? Are you going to have that talk with your parents?
Yeah, it's getting really like more and more important to me to have that talk, like just because so much has gone on with regard to like the church and their stance on, gay rights and homosexuality in general. I feel like it's in this weird state of flux where they're trying to make a very inclusive message, but they're still doubling down on all of the harmful things. And my parents, you know, they're still very invested in the church, and so they still have these very rigid views. So I think it's important that I sit down with them sometime soon and really hash it out with them and with my sister too. You know, like she has a son now. He's one, and he's absolutely beautiful, and I want to have a good relationship with him. And I feel like I can't do that knowing that when I leave, you know, after visiting, she's going to sit him down and talk about how, you know, he can still love me, but I'm sinning, you know.
Do you think your parents will feel the same way, where they love you even though they feel you're sinning?
I think so. I think that they will always love me, but I think it'll be very difficult for them to really act like nothing has changed.
And maybe they'll surprise you.
Maybe. I'm not holding out a lot of hope. It's weird because growing up, I would have said the exact opposite. But now that I'm older, my father is getting more liberal and my mother is getting more and more conservative, like the older they get. And as a kid, I always thought it would be the opposite. But my dad is surprising me, constantly surprising me with the things that he says or does, you know, to kind of make advances toward a more liberal way of thinking. It's very slow progress, but it is progress nonetheless. But my mom is just totally doubling down on this like neoconservative libertarian type thing, you know, the older she gets.
I wonder how much that would have to do with her health crisis. You know, that can be scary for people when they are looking at their, you know, what they believe after comes after, and that may be one reason mm-hmm. why she's doubling down.
Yeah, you know, I don't know. It's certainly possible that was a huge factor in it, in her doubling down on everything. But I think it might just also be a natural extension of her personality. And as a kid, I just wasn't aware of it. But as an adult now, it's more obvious to me, you know?
How do you think you'll address it? Do you think you'll just show up at home with your girlfriend?
probably not. you know, I think that my girlfriend is amazing, and I think that she would get along really well with most of my family, you know. But that might be a little much. Yeah. So what'll probably happen is, you know, next time I visit, or, you know, sometime at some point this year, just sit them down. And I kind of think I want to do it separately. I want to talk to each of them individually. Might have a better, I don't know, success rate with that one.
I hope it goes well.
Thanks. I'm sure it will. You know, these things, I tend to build them up in my head, but they're less scary than I think they're going to be.
Yeah, I'm the same way. I make it really bad, and I go through a crisis even before something happens, and mm-hmm. it's usually not as awful as I thought.
Right. Yeah, and you come out of it thinking, well, that was, you know, what a waste of energy.
Yeah. Do you think you'll ever resign from the church?
You know, I keep going back and forth on it. I thought really hard about doing it a couple years ago, and then I kind of backed off from it. I don't want to ever say something, you know, just affirm yes or no, because I don't like backing myself into corners, but I don't see myself resigning anytime soon. It just seems to me like a very pointless exercise. I mean, I understand for some people it's a very cathartic moment, but like I'm already disengaged, you know. The church doesn't really affect me except in the sense that I keep up to date, you know, as an academic exercise, so there's no real emotional need for me to resign.
Do you believe in God?
I consider myself generally agnostic. I really, really like the idea of a higher power, you know, of a deity. But my personal experience hasn't really borne it out. You know, I've never had the spiritual experiences that everybody talks about at church. You know, no matter how hard I prayed, and I did pray a lot, you know, I always felt increasingly alone. as opposed to feeling like I was talking to someone or that somebody was there supporting me.
Now, a lot of people would pick up on that, a lot of faithful Mormons, and would say, well, see there, she never had a testimony. She never really believed. How would you respond?
I think it's a complicated issue. The tricky part is that the church has no real clear defined teachings on what happens when somebody doesn't receive a testimony. So, you know, they're stuck in this infinite loop of, did you pray about it? Did you fast? Did you do this? Did you read your scriptures? And if you say yes and you didn't have a spiritual experience, then you go right back to step one and do it harder. But I guess anytime I engage with active members of, on the subject, I ask them, you know, how long do I have to do this before getting the desired result? Because my personal experience, and it's difficult to convey exactly how seriously I took it, but I took it quite seriously, where I was fasting. I was doing, you know, 24, 48, 72 hour fasts. I was praying multiple times daily. I was ditching class to find a quiet room and read the Book of Mormon and pray. You know, it was a daily thing that I did for close to 2 years. And if at the end of all of that, I feel more alone than I did when I first started, that to me is very strong evidence that either the formula isn't working, or I guess I'm just not capable, you know, and it's up to them to decide which of the two that is. But I did my due diligence.
I would say I had a strong belief and I had a lot of spiritual confirmations, but I never put that kind of time and dedication into it. So I think there are those that see, I have to rethink these things because I'm learning stuff myself. I don't want to say that there are those that are more spiritual, but maybe that is the right word, where things just, that side of themselves come easier than for others.
Yeah. I think in my, again, this is all like completely anecdotal, but I tend to separate people into, you know, the category. It's not so much a spiritual versus not spiritual, but to me it's a intuitive or emotional thinker and then an intellectual thinker, you know, and there's no moral judgment on either one of these in the sense that it's not one is, I'm not putting it into a paradigm where one is superior than the other or anything like that. It's straight up. Some people, are very emotive thinkers, you know, and that is how their brain is wired. That's how they process information. That's how they see the world. And they have very strong emotions attached to that processing. Whereas there are other people like me who think things through on a very intellectual level. And again, there's not a judgment saying that people who are emotive thinkers don't also, you know, not that they're not smart. Just I'm very, very rational, very logical. I don't have very strong emotional reactions to things, you know. So I think things through. And so any feeling I have comes through the filter of a very long process of thinking about it.
That makes perfect sense to me, because I would say I'm more on the emotional side of things. So I like using that word emotive or emotion instead of spiritual, because it takes away what you said. It's not right or it's not wrong. It just classifies it as a fact rather than putting it in some spiritual realm.
Right. Yeah. It's descriptive of the process. And that's kind of what I like to talk about, is the process of how people feel the spirit or how people don't feel the spirit. You know, it's not useful to me to say, well, some people are more spiritual.
Yeah. I like that. Also, as relying more on emotion instead of the intellectual side of things, I felt kind of betrayal, because they use that against me. They taught me that emotion equals truth, when in reality, it doesn't have anything to do with truth.
Right. And that was actually an early issue that I grappled with, kind of concurrently with dealing with sexuality, was this idea that emotion is like, or that truth is emotion based, you know, because I had a lot of experiences that I thought I was feeling something, you know, I had a very strong emotional reaction that I thought was the spirit. And I later, you know, turned out to be dead wrong. Or, the inverse is also true, where I would feel, you know, very strong emotional things, in relation to, you know, music or movies or books or that kind of thing. And, as a theater major, we dissect that, you know, in classes, you dissect, what, you know, the emotional makeup of scenes, and you study Greek tragedy and you understand what catharsis is, you know, and that's kind of what I think a lot of people mistake for the spirit.
Yeah, I think you're right. Interesting. Where do you see yourself in 5 years?
5 years, I sincerely hope that I'm fully out to my family, and I sincerely hope that by that point they will have had enough time to adjust and fully welcome me and whomever I'm dating into the family, you know, in the sense that I'm really hoping that I'll be welcome to bring people I'm dating over, you know, to family events. Beyond that, I, you know, want to own a home. I want to be further ahead in my career. You know, ideally I'd like to be involved in theater still, but that's, you know, up in the air right now.
The sky's the limit for you. You could do anything, go anywhere.
Yeah. I'm at a weird state of flux in my life right now where, you know, I'm just fully transitioning into adulthood and having goals and things that I thought were boring a long time ago. You know, who wants to own a home when you're 10? But life is what you make of it, you know, and I have every expectation of grabbing life, you know, and taking everything I can get from it in the next 5 years.
Nice. Do you see yourself ever having children?
The jury's out on it. I know I said earlier, I don't ever like to deal in absolutes. I don't like backing myself into corners. So, right now, I don't have a strong draw to have children, and I never have. I've never been maternal. That was another issue I always had at church, was, you know, being put into this, oh, well, you'll want kids someday thing. And I just always knew I never really saw myself having kids, but I'm open to being wrong. You know, I'm 25. You know, biological clock could start ticking any minute, you know?
Yeah, anything can happen.
If I change my mind, that's fine. You know, like I've got plenty of time.
Yeah, I'm kind of jealous that you've come to this point in your life where you're not tied down to religion, because I feel like there's a lot of time wasted since it took me so long.
I think that's a common experience. I see it a lot online. You know, people talk about time wasted. I guess I have a different perspective on time. To me, it's hard to imagine a sheer waste of time, you know? Even like growing up the way I did, my life was, I don't think it's a waste for my parents to have taken me to church all those years, you know? It made me who I am, and it gave me an interesting perspective on life.
Yeah, waste is probably too strong of a word, because I do have a beautiful family, and I can't even say I'd really change anything, but I wonder who I would be today if I didn't have such a strong pull in a different direction my entire life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I like that. That makes sense to me. Yeah, I guess I'm one of the lucky ones who got out early enough that it, you know, I don't have a lot of regrets in that sense.
Good. I'm glad. Anything else that you want to talk about, or any advice for somebody that finds themselves in the same situation you were in?
Yeah, to both, actually. I guess I'll take the last one first. In terms of advice, the single biggest thing that I wish had happened when I was going through my crisis was, I wish that I had sat down with somebody and talked to them about it. I isolated myself and I tried to deal with it on my own. And, if I hadn't, I think it might have been a lot less traumatic for me.
Who would you suggest they go talk to?
I think it depends on the situation. I didn't feel like I had anybody I could go to, but hindsight being what it is, I look back now and I can think of several people I could have gone to and trusted, and probably gotten good support from. I guess in general, I would say somebody you trust, if it can't be a family member, a friend. I'm kind of leery of saying, go talk to your bishop because, that is what it is. But,
Oh, my advice would be, I'd say look to anyone that you feel comfortable with, but I would say don't go to your bishop, no matter
right. Yeah.
what.
It, exactly. Like that's not a recommendation I could in good conscience make, but, you'd be surprised. Anybody who cares about you should be able to sit down and talk to about it. And especially, I don't know, I guess especially in this day and age, with gay rights and gay specific issues being on the front page so often, I think more people than ever before are receptive, and empathetic to helping people who are gay with their struggles,
Yeah, I'm sure it's not easy, but I think it's a lot easier now than ever before.
Yeah, I would agree with that. To me, like I don't want it to come across like my faith crisis was 100% centered around my sexuality, it's a very complicated and very nuanced issue, and I had doctrinal issues going back all the way to childhood, but they never made me think that the church wasn't true. They were just issues that I struggled with. And then when I realized I was gay, just like I said earlier, like all of the dominoes, toppled over at once, and all of those issues that had been sitting quietly just kind of all flooded out.
I think people say too easily that you left the church because you're gay, and I think it's important to know that there were a lot of issues leading up to it and not just one item that caused problems.
Right. Yeah. Well, I think it happens across the board. A lot of ex-Mormons say, well, what broke your shelf? What did you do that, or what happened to make you lose your testimony? And they boil it down to one or two major issues. But I think it's a lot more complicated than that. How can you, I don't know, how can you take the sum of your experiences and distill it down into one quantifiable thing?
It's never that easy, is it?
Right. Yeah. Life is complicated. Life is messy. And, I remember having like serious doctrinal concerns as, an 8-year-old, about, going to heaven with my family. I wasn't sold on the idea of the perfect world being surrounded by your family 24/7. I was a skeptical 8-year-old. And it was just issues like that that just made me stop and think, where most people were like, oh yeah, that sounds good.
Yeah, 8 years old, I really like that idea. I didn't
Oh
see a
no, like
problem
I,
with it.
right. And I was in the corner of the classroom thinking like, what is this? Why would I want that? My entire goal in life is to, finish growing up and move out. That was where I was at 8 years old.
Wow, you were a mature soul.
I think so. I always wanted to move out. I was always very independent, even as a very small child.
I'm sure that's helped you in your progression of life.
It has come in handy. Yeah. I flew the coop early and I haven't, I never went back. And that kind of made it easier for me to, be an adult and take on adult responsibilities, just because I knew I didn't have anything to fall back on.
All right. Well, I appreciate you talking with me tonight, Cheyenne.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you again. And if any of you would like to join Cheyenne in telling your story, please send me an email at voices@mormonexpression.com, and I would love to talk with you. Goodbye.
answer, I knew that nothing was for sure. I ate back the feeling, didn't know what I was feeling. One more drop into the electric night. One more crash through dissonance and its flight. Not waiting for your light. Heartbreaking, bide my time. Keep trying to hold back the fight. Keep crying. Strapped to